Summer of 2014 was a weird time for me. I moved out from my parents' house in Sherwood Park and into the city with some friends. It started out great. We cooked for each other, hung out, and listened to records. I really got to know them and they got to know me. But we found out we didn't really like each other as roommates. I also met a girl and it didn't work out. I felt isolated. So I drank alone, heavily and regularly. That part of my life is over now, and I no longer drink as I once did. But if I wanted help at that time, what does the university offer? I looked at how bad my drinking was. The U of A has a website called Check Yourself, where you answer a number of questions online and it gives you a score and a recommendation about what to do. I answered the questions and scored an 11. Anything above 8 is what's called problem drinking, which is frequent, regular drinking that doesn't have alcoholism's loss of control of quantity, frequency, or behavior. By the way, 61% of Check Yourself users in the 2013-2014 school year met the criteria for problem drinking. The Check Yourself score of 8 to 10 means a high risk of experiencing alcohol-related harm. A person scoring in the 11 to 19 range means that they will already be experiencing alcohol-related harm. I definitely needed help. The university offers three main resources that deal specifically with addiction and substance abuse, and a few others that offer generalized help. The first is the Addictions Helpline. I called it, and here's what I got.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected or is no longer in service. If you feel you have reached this recording in error, please check the number and try your call again.
The university website lists the wrong number. The right number can be found on the Alberta Health Services website. The university also recommends Alcoholics Anonymous, but there are some problems. This is Craig Staniforth from Alberta Health Services. He's worked as a counselor for 34 years.
AA is for people who have a desire to stop drinking.
Completely.
That's the only requirement to go to AA, is a desire to stop drinking. AA is really not for, quote, problem drinkers.
I looked into it anyway. Alcoholics Anonymous was founded in 1935, and the big book, AA's Central Text, was first published in 1939. The book is rife with moral psychology of the era, and the short narratives encourage alcoholics to embrace a higher power. Although this higher power doesn't necessarily have to be God, I know I would have a very difficult time accepting a higher power if I attempted to read the book in order to stop drinking. But the big book is different from Alcoholics Anonymous in practice. AA holds two types of meetings, open and closed meetings. Open meetings are open to both alcoholics and non-alcoholics, while closed meetings are for alcoholics only. I attended an open meeting. People from a wide variety of backgrounds took turns speaking about what led them to stop drinking and their struggles remaining sober. Some had been sober for years. Someone had just come from a party. Someone had relapsed less than 48 hours before. As expected, several AA members declined to be on the record. But the meeting was raw and brutally honest. Experiencing someone describe the depths of an addiction could really be encouragement to reevaluate someone else's own use. It's important to emphasize that one can't become an AA member and embark on the rigorous 12-step program if one isn't an alcoholic, and regularly attending open meetings without being an alcoholic isn't exactly encouraged. But AA prides itself on withholding judgment. The university also offers counseling through Alberta Health Services. Here's Craig talking about what sort of help is offered.
I want to get to know them, who they are. I'd like to then ask more specific questions about their use, their drinking in this case, and have them, I guess, reflect on how their drinking is affecting them, and then have them decide what they want to do about it, if anything, because the best way to help someone is for someone to help themselves. they have that capacity, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. And just, say, students coming into your office here, like, how often would you see them? Or how do those sessions work?
Sure. Well, I guess, Josh, it depends on the individual.
Right.
It may be just one session.
Mm-hmm.
For many people, they come to see a helper concerned about, you know, what's going on, get some counseling, self-reflect a little bit, and they go away and never need to come back. For others, of course, it requires, they believe, and we believe, that it requires more support. And in that case, for most outpatient counseling, what happens is maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks they would come in for an hour. That would be maybe like a one-to-one session. But I mean, there's many modes of therapy. I mean, there's group therapy and there's day programs and all that kind of thing. There's information series. It depends on their need where we'd want to put them.
As it turns out, self-reflection and self-monitoring seem to be effective.
So many people that have drinking issues or problem drinking symptoms really don't know how much they use. And so, because people generally don't sit in the bar and say, oh, gee, I'm on my eighth drink now.
Right.
You know, I mean, or how many times did you drink over the last week? People generally don't count that up. They don't know.
So they usually underestimate then?
Way.
Yeah.
Most people way underestimate their drinking. And so what we often do in the beginning is just have the student say, just say, don't change your drinking for a while. Go away and don't change it. Like, just monitor for a while and see mm-hmm. what happens. And it's amazing what people come up with. Often when they come back, they say, wow, I had no idea I was drinking this quantity. You know, it's kind of like when you take out the empties, you know, you say, who drank all this? So, after that, and if, you know, if they still, you know, had concerns, then there's lots of places they can go.
What did I do to stop drinking as much as I did? Nothing. I moved back home, which was probably important. But drinking by yourself and hiding it from everyone takes a lot of work. School started, and I stopped easily. And for a while, I thought to myself that I'd accomplished something. I'd overcome an adversity. There was a sense of individualism. There was a sense of self-worth that I really needed at that time. And I was suspicious toward the mental health institution. You read Foucault and you think they're trying to control you.
One of the symptoms of a developing addiction is isolation. It's almost impossible to develop a full-blown addiction while you are intimately connected with yourself and with other people. In many ways, addiction is a malady of disconnection. You disconnect from other people.
You intentionally disconnect from other people.
No, I wouldn't say that.
No.
I would say that it just happens.
Okay.
That you disconnect from people and you disconnect from yourself. And so if people say, you know, they don't want to see anybody. That's normal. That's normal, kind of. We all want to do it ourselves
yeah.
in the beginning. But in some ways, that is seen as the beginning of disconnection. It can be seen as the beginning of disconnection. In order to know what's happening with me, I need to be able to talk about it. I need to be able to get it out in the open with someone that's objective. And really, what I'm doing as a client is I'm self-exploring. And if I don't get that external stimuli to self-explore, then I don't know myself.
In other words, they don't want to take away your agency. They want you to regain your own agency. message to seek help has been too blunt, and without understanding the nuances of what this help is, such a message has little effect. Many people resist professional help, or they haven't reached that point where they need it. At the very least, if there's anything anyone can do about an addiction or mental health, they can talk about it.